Hi, this is Dr. Spencer, and you're tuning in to Dr. Spencer's Soul Surgeons. And this episode today is one of several series that will follow this first episode entitled Bad, Bougie, and Bullied, Why Successful Women Attract Toxic Mates. So the guests I have today are amazing women. They both have their PhDs. One has a PhD in an anomaly of like applied mathematics and the other physics of some sort, but they're super smart women, both married, career women, but have this unique perspective on how these successful women, we as successful women, attract toxic mates. So the first question that was posed is, what is it about successful women that attract toxic mates? Now, Karen, I need you to weigh in on this in some way. What is it about the characteristics of successful women that you think attract toxic mates? Shantae, you want to weigh in?
What is it about successful driven women that
toxic mates? Because I know you're married and you have a wonderful husband.
Yes.
But when you were in the dating arena, like, was it something about the characteristics of successful women? Like, for example, I think a lot of times the successful women were naturally very driven.
Yeah.
We're naturally self-motivated, with self-starters, but we also are fixers. We like to, we're solutions oriented.
Right.
And so a lot of times we meet these men or women and we're challenged by the project. We're challenged by their potential. And we want to somehow insert our expertise, insert our compassion, insert our understanding and patience and making them become a better version of, version of themselves. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's at a sacrifice to our own mental, emotional, spiritual, and sometimes physical well-being.
Yeah. And I think sometimes in those instances, those type of men, once they see a woman investing all of that into them, and it could be a scenario, either you remind them of a mother or some kind of mother figure, or they just never experienced that before, and they just, you know, maybe it ties into their definition of love, but at any rate, they get comfortable with that. And I think sometimes a sense of entitlement comes with it, in that, you know, they may feel like, well, the woman doesn't expect anything else from me other than to be her project. So they may feel like they don't have any goals or anything in mind as far as the relationship that they necessarily have to reach for. And I think sometimes they just get comfortable and complacent in that situation because, you know, they have it made and the woman is basically doing everything for them and they've never been given any reason to, you know, do anything else because they're just so comfortable, even to the point where they don't think to, like, do something nice for her, to show appreciation or to show her that you can function and do things, you know, on their own. I just think sometimes they just get so comfortable and complacent and, you know,
they
just don't have a desire,
Shantae,
to change.
But I think a lot of times they feel like they can't add any value. Like, you know it all, you can do it all. That's what you're doing right now. How can I do any more than what you're already doing? Now, as a background, what's your PhD in, Shantae? Remind me.
I work in medical physics.
Okay.
So, specifically in radiation therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I say that just to qualify Shantae. She is a
board certified
medical physicist. Brilliant mind. But she's still human, still very feminine, still very much so affected by the things that everyday women encounter. I can insert my own personal experience. You know, I'm recently divorced, and the person that I was married to, he had a lot of ideas but no execution. Mm-hmm. And I think in the best possible scenario, he would have been fantastic mate. Mm-hmm. But over time, I got so busy with work, consumed with the passionate pursuit of my career, that I didn't wake up and just say, this is unacceptable. Mm-hmm. So my next question is, like, how do we get back in the driver's seat? Like, how do we go from being bullied and bitter to being better? Mm-hmm. And I just had to just wake up one day. And I guess the turning point for me was I was having a conversation with a mutual colleague, and it wasn't anything that was, you know, sexual or emotionally inappropriate, and it was a male colleague. But after leaving that conversation, it really changed the trajectory of my life, because it raised the bar for my expectations of how I should feel and how I should interact with the opposite sex. Like, it was a very engaging conversation. I felt like I was all in. It was very refreshing. And I said to myself, this is what I want being with my mate to feel like. Like, I want to be engaged. I want to be mentally challenged. I want to feel like I'm not doing all the heavy lifting. I'm not coming. I want to bring something to the table. I want some ROI. I want some return on my investment. I've invested time. I invested energy and effort. I'm emotionally invested. Now, what am I going to get in the downstream from that? Because I think a lot of times as women, we can be too altruistic, where we just want to give of ourselves and not expect anything in return. We need to be like our male colleagues, because if they putting in some time and effort, they're going to expect something back. Point blank. And they make no apologies for it. They wonder, what can I get out of this interaction, this relationship, be it business, personal, professional, intimate, etc.
And I think that's interesting what you said at the beginning about them feeling like they didn't bring anything to the table. You know, that has to be a conversation that's had at the beginning. If he feels like he doesn't have anything to bring to the table, like you said, it should have been an engaging conversation to that point. I don't know if it was like, oh, you're talking to each other, getting to know each other. And in the woman's mind, she's thinking how she can make him her project. But he may be thinking, you know, this woman is not interested in me. I don't have nothing I can bring to the table. You know, why does she want to be with me? But he's not just going to come out and say that, you know. So he just lets the relationship just keep going in the direction that it's going. Okay, if she wants to make me her project, then okay, this is what I'm going to do. But he probably already felt like that at the beginning. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Maybe you noticed it later, but he probably already felt like that at the beginning.
But you don't go in thinking that, because a lot of times the guy will act like he's very optimistic, and he feels like, I mean, he may send his representative, but he comes across as being all in. But then when he really says, hey, this woman is the real deal, what can I really offer her? Like, what can I bring to the table?
But at that point, is it too far gone?
Now, the next question I have is, what type of men are you attracted to?
Ooh, that has changed
Now, Shantae said that has changed. So it's changed since she's been married. But I guess I could say past and present. I can start off by answering the question. Like, I recognize I am an alpha female. And so I'm attracted to men that have a certain presence, a certain confidence when they walk in the room. Men that have this unquestionable, unapologetic clarity and confidence and sophistication that can be assertive without being aggressive. I mean, those are the types of men I feel that I am attracted to. What I have attracted is oftentimes men that present those things, but authentically all of those things aren't sustainable for a long period of time, where, you know, during the courtship, they can sustain that level of, you know, bravado, but it doesn't last very, very long when presented with someone that is an alpha female. And therein lies the problem. So what type of men are you attracted to?
I like men who have like humility is attractive, quiet confidence. He knows who he is in spite of who I am, what I do, what I bring to the table. I'm not gonna lie, physical is important to me very much in my book.
There isn't anything wrong with needing some physical attraction.
Teeth are concerned.
Oral hygiene is important.
Very important in my book. Oral hygiene. Hygiene in general, but especially hygiene. I love a man. I love somebody who can teach me something.
Yes. Added value.
Yes.
Whether it's academic, financial, social, spiritual, mental, emotional. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's important.
Yes. Very attractive.
Okay. Karen, I was just asking Shantae. Now, Karen's one of the smartest people I know. She has her PhD in, like, systems and applied mathematics, all sort of things that I don't even know what means, but I know she was my college roommate, but just super smart, and but has a wonderful perspective on love and life and living in a very pragmatic sort of way. And so I'm curious, I've known Karen through her dating and through her married life, but I'm just curious as to what type of men are you attracted to? In the past and now.
Intelligence is probably at the top of the list.
Okay. They need to be cerebral.
They need to be able to challenge my way of thinking. And that probably, they need to be attractive, but you can, and I have a crush on Idris Elba, just saying. You can be Idris. If you open up your mouth and your conversation isn't engaging.
Yeah.
It completely is a turn off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's problematic. So what type, those are really good qualities. They have to be like very cerebral, academic, easy on the eyes. But what is it, do you think, that's about successful women that can attract toxic men or toxic mates in general? What is it about the makeup, the personalities of women that are very successful that can sometimes attract people in our lives that may not have our best interest at heart?
That's a difficult one.
And some of the things that Shanta and I discussed earlier was that a lot of times when you're successful, it's kind of in your makeup to be a perfectionist. It's in your makeup to be very hardworking. It's in your makeup to take charge, to want a challenge. So oftentimes we attract mates that are projects. How can we insert the best version of ourselves and help someone else become a better version of themselves? But oftentimes that is at the sacrifice of who we are as women.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah,
I can see that.
And I use my own,
I think also,
self-worth as an example.
One of the issues that I've had is that there's a certain level of confidence that we need our mates to have.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that oftentimes men tend to gravitate towards women who are needy.
Mm.
In terms of they need to be taken care of. They're emotionally, they're a lot more vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a female that is very much so goal-oriented, a go-getter, oftentimes I can't say that I'm that emotional damsel in distress that needs someone, French term, to come in and save me.
Because men, their genetic makeup is they like a cheerleader. They want to be validated. They want to feel like they're the most important person in the room. They want you to be fully engaged in their every being of their existence. And so if you have a woman that is maybe not as assertive, who can be docile, accommodating, acquiescent, being his own personal cheerleader at the sacrifice of her own emotional needs, that's attractive to some men. And some men will seek out women that they feel are in an emotionally vulnerable position. Meanwhile, women that are successful oftentimes will meet men that appear to be confident, supporting, like they can handle you and themselves, but it's not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
When they're truly challenged and met with, okay, this is the real deal, they can't really sustain the relationship for a prolonged period of time. They may be able to pull it off for a few months, maybe even a few years. Mm-hmm. But over time, time will tell that it's hard for them to maintain that level of having their own bravado and confidence in the setting of a woman that appears to have it all, can do it all, know it all. Where do I fit into this?
And a quiet confidence, that is so attractive. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be boastful, right. But yeah.
I would agree. Now, another question I had is, what challenges have you had while in a married relationship? Because I know there are a lot of challenges that women have while they're dating, but what challenges have you had while married?
One of the easier ones to kind of point to is in terms of finances.
And if you don't mind my asking, just for the listeners, like, what line of work does your husband do?
We both teach. Mm-hmm. And the challenge becomes as you begin to acquire things together, or even if you come into the marriage with certain things, how does that kind of, that sharing those responsibilities, how does it work? Mm-hmm. It sounds really great on paper and in theory to say everything once you are married, everything is this one. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And that's something I can understand more if you're both starting at a similar place.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like a lot of women, we start out in a higher career position and sometimes a higher financial position than some of the men and women that we're dating or that we're married to.
But how does that translate into shared responsibilities, financial and otherwise? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that can be a little difficult.
How so?
From a practical standpoint, who pays for what? Does everything come out? If there's a big discrepancy in salaries, is that something that if you make more than your spouse, that you should be solely responsible for? Mm-hmm. How does it work? Should everything go into a joint account? So even if you make maybe 2-3 times their salary, should, in terms of any, once you finish paying the bills, is everything going to a joint pot? Do you have your separate accounts? Mm-hmm. It could be a challenge because everyone makes choices in terms of their career paths. So if you've chosen a path where you're able to, you make more money, you can do various things in order to acquire more. And then maybe your spouse isn't as ambitious. Should everything still be viewed as one? Should everything go into one pot, even though maybe they made decisions where they didn't choose to acquire more, but you did? So it becomes a challenge.
Mm. But the question is, I guess, I mean, every problem or every challenge has a solution. Like, how do we as women get back in the driver's seat? How do you reclaim your power? Because oftentimes it ends up being a power struggle. That's not usually our intentions going in, but that's what it ends up being, a tug of war.
With the same person, the same relationship, or just you talking about moving forward after you've broken up with somebody?
Well, both, but primarily, like, what Shante is asking is this, how do you get back in the driver's seat, either with the person that you're currently with, or moving and to go ahead and move on? But I think sometimes we have to address both, because sometimes you may decide that, hey, we're not rowing in the same direction and I may need to move on because it is too much of a power struggle. You know, the risks of being with this person, the mental, emotional, spiritual risk does not outweigh the benefit. What are they adding? If they can't add any value, there's no long-term or downstream return on investment, then I may need to move on. And then conversely, if you're in a marriage, you've invested time, money, energy, effort, emotions, and you want to figure out, how can I help make this work better? How can we try to evolve into a better couple where we're meeting each other where we are without antagonizing the other individual or making the other individual feel less than? And that can be hard because you can't change people.
Overnight.
Yeah. So I think I can just speak for, like, if you're in a dating relationship, and I guess you can speak, and you, Karen, too, in the marriage scenario. But if you're in the dating world, it's important to know when you're not rowing in the same direction, and know that two good people can have one bad relationship. And so if you find that you being who you are is going to be a you being who you are, you being in the career that you're in, you having the position that you're in, if it's going to be a liability to the relationship, then it's not worth the relationship, because you're going to always be who you are. You're only going to get better. You're only going to get busier. You're only going to get more engaged in what you're doing as you climb this ladder of success that you've defined for yourself. So the person that is with you can't understand and get on board with that, then it's time to move onward and upward. Again, doesn't mean it's a bad person, but you have to value yourself more. You can love that person, but you've got to love yourself enough to know that you deserve better. You need to be with someone that can honor and celebrate that and not be intimidated by that. And so I guess which leads me to my next point. When you're married, how do you reconcile that challenge of that tug of war when you may not always be as equally yoked as you want to be in terms of finances, in terms of your career decisions, your position in your community, and all those things that kind of give you that edge in the world, but put your spouse on edge in the home?
You just have to have that come to Jesus meeting. Mm-hmm. And both parties have to be willing to sit down and have that open dialogue and really be honest about everything, you know.
Is this a conversation, Shantae, you think this should take place in the beginning of a marriage or relationship, or it's an ongoing conversation, you think?
Absolutely in the beginning, and there's nothing wrong with ongoing conversations, because I do believe personally that you and your spouse should check in with each other from time to time, because things, even though you're married, you still have things going on as an individual, and those things can change. You know, you may decide that you want to change careers. You may decide, you know, this is not my case, but maybe, you know, the couple was in an agreement about children. I know that one of the hosts on The Real, she got divorced from her husband because they went into the marriage agreeing that they did not want children of their own. They weren't going to have them. But then something changed, and the husband decided that he did want it, but the wife said, no, I still don't. And so,
I can see how that could present conflict.
They divorced.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. You know, it's important to have those conversations, definitely in the beginning.
But how do you even initiate that sort of conversation? Because it can come across, depending on the scenario, as being defensive, or it can be an uncomfortable conversation. So is this something you bring up in the middle of an argument?
No, definitely not in the middle of an argument.
When do you insert these conversations?
Definitely not when the other person is distracted. You know, I think it's important to, hopefully, if you're dating somebody and you think it's a good relationship, hopefully there, you know, communication is a factor, two-way communication, effective communication. And you should be in a relationship where you feel comfortable enough to bring up those uncomfortable topics and be open and honest with one another, no matter if the outcome is uncomfortable for one another, first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to go into a relationship based on a lie. You know, that's important for me.
Sure.
I don't want to be deceived. You know, I want you to be open and honest with me in the beginning.
Yeah, but a lot of times, Shantae, women, we have to be honest with ourselves,
and
too.
You definitely have to be honest with yourself as mm-hmm. far as what you want. And I think that's number one.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what you want.
Mm-hmm. Or be honest about what you want.
Be honest about what you want. Know what you want and be honest about it.
If you want someone to take care of you, you need a sugar daddy, be mm-hmm. honest about that.
Exactly.
If you feel like you want to
and stand by it.
Have someone that you take care of, be honest about that. If you're okay with just having a status symbol mate where they go accompany you to your company dinners and mm-hmm. fundraisers and photo opportunities, if that's what it is, that's what it is. But you just have to be honest about what it is that you want and what you're going to be comfortable with. But also, do not be afraid to change midstream. Because what I wanted 5 years ago is completely different than what I want now.
And it should be.
And it's even different from what I wanted last year.
You evolve. That's correct.
But we have to give ourselves permission to be flexible or to change direction midstream. A lot of times we feel like we have to be the same person at all times to all people, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of our state in life. But give yourself the flexibility to be malleable and to change and have your needs accommodated based on how you're feeling and whatever your station in life is. Yeah. So Karen, with marriage, like, how do you engage in that conversation about being equal partners or contributing in such a way where you don't feel like you're being bullied in a relationship and you're doing all the heavy lifting? How do you make that a conversation that's a difficult? How do you add clarity to the complex issue of equality in a marriage where clearly things are not equal in terms of finances and career status?
Well, I think that, of course, you want to try communicating one-on-one, but I also believe in therapy. Sometimes you need a third party.
Sure, an outside objective party.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be difficult because as both parties are evolving in the marriage, they might evolve in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often difficult because, again, you marry someone based on who you think they are.
They send a representative, if you often
yes.
say.
Right. And it's a difficult one, but I think that whether it's through communication one-on-one or with a third party, that's probably the first step. Mm-hmm. And it's an ongoing thing.
But do you think it'll make your mate uncomfortable if you're inviting in a third party so early
absolutely.
Into the marriage?
But that's not a bad thing. I believe in from being uncomfortable is how you grow.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you evolve. And I think that we should never be stagnant. Mm-hmm. Never be afraid to learn more. Mm-hmm. Experience more. So I'm open. Oftentimes,
but you may be open. Do you think the spouse and the mate,
and that's a tough one,
is open as well?
I found the men don't seem to be as open.
Mm-hmm.
With therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, that's a difficult one because the one party wants to and the other one doesn't. Mm-hmm. How do you reconcile that? And
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah,
I don't have the answer to that. It's a whole bunch of answers I don't have.
But the important thing is to keep asking the questions. That's the thing. Now, I know we've talked a lot about the challenges in love and relationships of successful women, whether you are dating or in a marriage. But how can we encourage our listeners to get back in the driver's seat if they somehow become derailed in their lives, distracted in their relationships, kind of gotten off course in their marriages, to get back in the driver's seat and to regain their power? The first thing for me that comes to mind is to remind ourselves of our worth and come up with not just an idea, but an execution. How am I going to get back in the driver's seat? And I think before you can act, you need to be aware. And so just reminding our women, our sisters, our friends, our colleagues, that you matter and that it is not sustainable. I don't care how successful you are, you're focused, you're energetic, you're thoughtful, you're engaging. It is not sustainable to maintain that high level of perfection without getting tired and worn out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got to give yourself permission to just take a breather, take a step back, and be aware that, hey, I'm human.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not infallible. I've got to do things that's going to put me first again, whether it's deciding to start back working out, whether it's deciding to be more diligent in going to church, whether it's just joining a yoga class or a spin class, but doing something that only you can do and your spouse can't invite him or herself to join you on.
And part of the issue becomes when you're in a relationship or you're married is you do want to make sure you're doing things together collectively, things that are putting a smile on their face.
Yeah.
And oftentimes we as women get lost. We're nurturers, we're providers.
We are.
So we want to make sure that everyone's taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't take care of ourselves.
Put your own mask on first.
Yes.
Yeah.
But our spouses, our mates, people want to feel validated. People want to be seen. So I think to Karen's point, it's important to also have activities that can integrate this other individual and boost their self-esteem and self-worth without compromising your own value. But to make sure you do things that you enjoy doing on your own. Anyway, I think this was a nice first of many series in this podcast, Bad, Bougie, and Bullied. I'm hoping that this episode has been helpful for the women that are listening. And our goal is through the series of having a conversation. I always feel that change comes with having a conversation, that by us having discussions about it, it'll encourage women to change and do things a little differently in terms of being successful, but don't allow what has caused you to be successful to attract people that are toxic to you and to your livelihood. So say, Karen, you want to say something?
I think we didn't discuss one thing.
What's that?
Sometimes we need to take a very hard look at ourselves and be very introspective. So we want to say that we are attracting toxic men, but sometimes some of our behaviors, actions, our words, we're getting the energy we're putting out.
Yeah, because we can be enablers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the truth is we may need to do some work on ourselves prior to getting in a relationship.
Absolutely.
And I think that we can quickly point at others, but instead, again, if you keep it's one toxic relationship after another, we have to say, I'm the common denominator.
Sure.
And so...
spoken by a true mathematician.
But yeah, I just think that as women, sometimes, again, what you all were saying, be honest about what you want, your expectations, and understand what are... sometimes what we want and what we need are two separate things.
I like that. What we want and what we need are two separate things. So what are some of the things that a lot of women want versus what a lot of us need, Karen?
When we say we want to be taken care of, right?
Sure.
I've heard quite a few people, I don't know that this is on my list of things, but whether it's taken care of, being people buying whatever you want, being able to wind down, who doesn't want some nice gifts? But at the same time, if you have someone that's as equally as driven as you are, will they have the time to spend on the relationship and on you?
You bring up an excellent point, because let me tell you, when I had this this moment when I was traveling in Dubai. I was there for a brief moment of time for a talk, and I was in the hotel lobby, and I saw this young, beautiful woman, and she had two babies, one in a stroller, one next to her, and she clearly was a kept woman. I mean, I just kind of sized her up, and she was clearly a kept woman. And for a microsecond, I said, gosh, it must be so nice where your only responsibility for the day is go work out, go to the spa, take the children for a walk, pass them off to the nanny, have someone take care of you, take you shopping, etc., and you do it all over again. But then reality set in. I'm like, would I really want that? Like, although I feel like I would want someone at some point to do some of the heavy lifting and take care of me, but I love having my autonomy. I love being able to swipe my card and not have to get permission. I love having to I like the fact I don't have to be dependent on someone or have to make a phone call before I make a purchase. And so my mom has always said nothing is free. And so there's always something that's going to come with being quote unquote taken care of. So in terms of that want, so I get that. So I'm so glad you brought that up. Now, in terms of what women need, do you think that that's somehow different too? Like, are we in touch with what we truly need?
I think it changes, and what we were taught as girls.
What were we taught as girls that we need?
So I went to an all-girls school. And even at 7th or 8th grade, you would have the girls talking about dating the boy from the right family.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that they have ties to the right family so that they can get married. And this was in eighth grade.
Wow.
So many of your actions were geared, and again, not everyone, but we had a nice number of your actions were geared towards making sure you married with to the right person and the right family. You have the proper etiquette. And it was just interesting because so many of those views involved, you weren't complete unless you were associated with a male.
But you know what's interesting about that? I don't know that a lot of us have had that experience, okay. Like being in a private all-girls school and having that messaging. I think it's a very valuable message to come across, because oftentimes in certain communities we're not taught that. And I had just the opposite experience growing up with my mom. She was a single parent of four children. And my mother always taught us that boys or men will come and go. They will always be there, always around, always available. You focus on your career. And now I submit to you, when I was younger, that helped me stay focused. It helped me go ahead and get my, you know, finish college on time and get my medical degree and function as a resident, eventually as a practicing surgeon. But I submit to you that my life would have been very different had I not had the messaging that you had, Karen, very early on, to be just as deliberate in my professional life as I was in my dating life. I was not. And I think if I had put in the same type of effort and energy into making sure that I had the right or quote-unquote proper mate, and when I say proper, I don't mean in a derogatory sort of term, but really putting effort and being very intentional and deliberate and making sure that I made myself available to a suitable mate. Because he would find a wife, find a good thing, so I want him to find me. But putting myself in a position where I can have a mate that not only I... No, I'm desiring, but he's desiring me, but that is one that can lend himself to the type of woman that I am and also the woman that I would evolve into. And I think that's one thing that I'm going to change in terms of the messaging that I give to my daughter, is for her to focus on your education, but I want you to be very deliberate in knowing who you're dating and who you're going to be spending time with, because it absolutely can change the trajectory of your life. Yeah. It doesn't matter how educated we are as women. Mm-hmm. If we get with the wrong mate, it can completely wreck
everything,
all of our efforts, everything that we've worked hard for, and it's not worth it. Right. It is absolutely not worth it. So we've got to have some pause and give that some consideration. So I'm really glad that you brought that up.
That's good advice. Because, I mean, I grew up in, you know, two-parent home, but like you, April, education was stressed first, you know, and independence. For me, it was always, you know, do things so that you could be independent, so that you don't ever have to depend on a man.
Right.
And so that took away. So once message, I got older, it was like, okay, well, what about this?
The message is school and home were different.
It's different.
At home, it was be independent. Mm-hmm. But this is the other thing. You grew up in a two-parent household.
Mm-hmm.
We, April, you didn't, neither did I.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is, how do you know how you're supposed to be treated as a woman? What does that look like? You're trying to figure that out, because if you hope that if your mom, or maybe you had an aunt or sisters or someone that had that positive male role model, I would always be envious of my friends who their dad bought them Valentine's Day gifts, would take them out to dinner, take them out to the movies. Because honestly, other than watching someone else's dad, I didn't know what that looked like, because I didn't see it up close and personal. So oftentimes we're trying to fill these voids of what it means, what a relationship is supposed to look like. But when you haven't seen it, how do you know?
Yeah. But, and also, just, I wasn't deliberate in, you know, as far as dating and stuff. And I only had my parents to look at. But I didn't know if that was best for me.
Okay.
Sure.
And I know what their picture looked like, but it was always very clear to me, I don't know if that's what's best for Shantae.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish I had been more deliberate earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had gotten that message that you just said that you're going to give to your daughter. I wish I had gotten
that Karen got, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, don't neglect that. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, this is first. Yes, I want you to stay focused. but don't completely neglect that either.
Sure, because it's just as important.
It is.
And sometimes even more important, because you can have your degrees, your prestige, your honor, your position, but if you give the wrong person, it can really compromise all that you worked hard for. So you really need to be rowing in the same direction. But if you have invested the time, energy, and effort in making sure you align yourself with someone that gets that, and who's living that life and talking that talk and walking that walk, it'd be severely problematic for generations, not just in the present.
Right. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. But anyway, we can go on about this topic, on and on, so that's why this is going to be a part two. But I definitely want to end by thanking Karen and Shante for being so transparent. Again, these lovely ladies I've known for a very long time, and they have their PhDs in some of the most amazing things. They're professors, they're leaders in their community, leaders in their hospitals, leaders in their academic institutions, but they're also leaders in matters of the heart and love and life and getting women on board with being a better version of themselves. And they don't have all the answers, but what I love about them is that they never stop asking the questions. They never stop challenging themselves. How can each of them become a better version of themselves, and how can they encourage the listeners or other women to try to continue to ask the questions, even if you don't always have the answers, but challenge yourself to try to wake up winning, becoming a better version of yourself. So nonetheless, stay tuned for the next podcast. Our episode, our second episode, will still be Bad, Bougie, and Bully: How Successful Women Attract Toxic Mates, and How Can We Get Back in the Driver's Seat and Reclaim Our Power. Thanks for listening. Until next time. Hey, this is Dr. Speed, and you're listening to Soul Surgeons. Today, I have some lovely women, and we're just talking about work-life balance. Whether you're married or single, it's never easy, but how do you just integrate your life at home with your life at work, whether you work inside the home or outside the home? It's no perfect answer, but I definitely want to try to give you tools to make that integration a little bit more feasible. So we have Shefali, who's absolutely amazing. Shefali, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm a mess on any given day. It's a good way to describe me. I'm a mom, a wife, have three amazing kids, been married for 23 years, and I totally agree that integration is a good word. Dr. Spencer used, because I know we talk a lot about the work-life balance, and the work-life balance I don't think truly exists all the time. I have a full-time career. I was an executive at a big bank, and it's, you know, I think that there's weeks that I'm really good at my job, and I think that there's weeks that I'm, those weeks sometimes when I'm really good at my job, I'm not so good at my job at home as a mom, and then there's weeks that I'm really good as a mom at home, but then I'm probably not as good at my job at work. So, I mean, I think that you just have to figure out what's the right level of comfort. And my good friend, Nicole, who's going to talk next, talks a little bit about the balance of what's going on. Talks about the balance, about what it's like about being a, not only a single mom, but just figuring out how it works to be a mama, and also put a lot of stuff on hold to be a mama as a single mom. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I love Nicole. I love her story. I mean, she's a single mom. She has an amazing son. Can I say his name? Travis. We love Travis. got accepted to Harvard. I mean, she spent like her entire, I had to say it, Nicole wouldn't say it. But she's invested a lot of time and energy and effort into Travis. She divorced about 15 years ago, Nicole? And since then has like dedicated her whole life, her whole being to her son. But Shefali and I are very committed to making sure that she kind of gets back in the driver's seat, as we often talk about on Soul Search and start putting herself first again. And we really want to encourage the listeners to make a deliberate effort and a commitment to putting yourself first again. You shouldn't, like Nicole, although I love her, you shouldn't have to wait until your children are out of the house to do that. Like, it needs to be when you reach finally, like, a deliberate effort, and not feel guilty about wanting to feel good, wanting to be loved, wanting to be validated, wanting to have someone take care of you mentally and emotionally and spiritually. All those things matter, but that's not something that needs to be like a delayed gratification.
Right. Totally agree with you, Dr. Speed. I am trying to figure things out. Again, as Dr. Speed said, my son is off to Spencer. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
He is off to Harvard. And
I've been called worse.
I just love her. Love, love, love her spirit. But been divorced from my son's father for about 14 years now, and decided, made a conscious decision not to date. Not because, you know, the men were not available, but just chose not to date because I wanted to devote all my time and effort into my son.
And what did you hope to achieve in that goal? Because a lot of women, I've come across a lot of patients that say, hey, I'm focusing all my efforts on my children right now. So what did you, and I think, you know, your intentions were good, but what did you expect to achieve in putting your love life, your mental, emotional, spiritual self kind of on hold and pouring everything, every fiber of your being into your son?
I did. I don't regret it. I look back now and I don't regret any of it that I did. Because as a result of that, you know, my son is, you know, is getting ready to go, is finishing high school at the top of his class. He's very active in the community. He's doing other things. I'm not at a courthouse. I don't have a son that's out in the streets. He's on his way to Harvard. So to that, I don't regret devoting my life into him and surrounding everything around him. But it's like now I'm at the point where I am stuck. And I have to learn and know how to get back in that driver's seat to take control of my life, to do some of the things that I enjoy, some of the things that I like. And I'm finding it to be very difficult at this time. But
what's making it difficult?
It's making it difficult because for 14 years, I wasn't concerned with that. That wasn't like a laser focus for me. That wasn't my focus. My focus was to making sure my son was safe. He was in a healthy environment. Seeing a healthy, co-parent relationship with me and his father. The divorce itself was very harsh on both of us. I saw the signs in my son at a very, very young age.
What are some of the things that you noticed?
Some of the things that I noticed in my son after.
And how old was he?
He was about five or 6 years old.
That's a tough age.
Yeah, that's a very tough age, and he only knew mom and dad. So I saw at a very young age what the divorce did to him mentally and emotionally. So I immediately reacted to getting counseling, to do other things that would help him cope. And I think my number one priority was he saw mom and dad together, and then he saw mom and dad not together.
So what did you notice specifically? That was like a red flag for you.
A red flag to me was when your child comes and talks to you about suicide.
At what age?
At 5 years old.
What did he say?
He just said, Mom, I don't want to live. I don't want to be here. I want you and my dad together. Me as a mom, I knew that was impossible, that wasn't going to happen. So in your mind, you're thinking, what do I need to do as a mother to protect my son, to let him know that even though this is an adult problem, even though he knew it was an adult problem, he didn't feel like it was. He felt like he was at fault.
But that's what the research shows.
Yeah.
That children that are in families where there's a divorce, they feel like
they feel like they.
So at least he felt comfortable enough to share with you what he was feeling. And how he felt helpless and hopeless.
Right.
But that must have been very difficult.
It was very difficult.
At the end of it, like,
hearing your son share with him that he doesn't want to be
here. Right.
And he's 5.
And he's 5 years old.
He should be talking about, you know, recess. Right. And school and what his exactly. favorite color is and what he wants to be when he grow up.
Right.
And not like, I don't want to be here anymore because right. this is the most awful thing I've experienced. Right. So how did you deal with that?
Like, well, see, that was the reason and my priority for putting my life on hold because of that. Mm-hmm. When I heard those words come out of his mouth, it did something to my... It just did something to me. Mm-hmm. I can't explain to you how I felt, but I felt as a mom, I had to put everything on hold. Mm-hmm. My love life, you know, even with my careers, I turned down promotions of not traveling, not doing things with my company because I wanted to always, my son to always know that mommy's here. And mommy's not going to go anywhere. Even though his dad was not in the house, he still tried to, you know, be relevant in his life.
Sure.
Which that wasn't consistent. Mm-hmm. It wasn't consistent enough. It wasn't consistent. So no regrets here.
Peanut gallery over here.
That's why we love you, Shabali.
Yeah. No regrets over here. I just knew that I had to do what I had to do to make sure my son felt like he was in a safe environment. Mm-hmm. He was secure. He knew that
So what are some of the things that you did? Like, it sounds like you were very deliberate and cold,
yes.
and I love that. But so, what are some things you did? We're having cocktails and conversations, so we're like... pouring up Nicole another drink so she can share with us what she did.
Well, some of the things that I did, the number one thing was I my son and I, we remained in church. And that was our foundation.
Okay. So you had a good spiritual...
I had a good spiritual foundation.
Faith or foundation.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter what your religion is, as long as there's some spirituality thing that's
exactly.
important.
Exactly.
In terms of being able to get through...
Right. Right. So that was number one. So our faith, we totally leaned and depend on God getting us through this horrible experience that we went through. And we had the support of like my pastor, my pastor's wife, you know, some of the members.
Was your husband a member of the church? Were you guys
a
member?
Yes, he was. He was actually a minister of the church.
Interesting.
Yes.
Did he stay there after divorce?
No, he did not. No, he didn't. He did not stay there after the divorce. He left after the divorce.
And do you mind my asking, what you think in hindsight was the primary cause of the dissolution of the marriage?
I think number one, the marriage was dissolved because of infidelity. He was not faithful.
Mm-hmm. That could be problematic.
Yeah. He was not faithful. And the things that I kept, we kept revisiting. It just kept happening over and over again. And I got to the point.
So he cheated more than once.
He cheated more than once.
So he sounds like he was a very intelligent man.
Very.
He sounded like he was a spiritual man.
Very.
He sounded like someone that appearances was very important to him.
Right.
So I'm going to venture to say that he had some sort of justification for his actions. So what did he say was the reason for his, not just one incident?
Well, everything that
of infidelity,
that he said that I was not doing, I tried my best to do them.
So it was your fault?
Yeah, it was my fault. It was my fault that he wasn't getting what he needed to get from home, which was crazy. That was crazy. I just think when you have in your mind and in your heart that you're not really fully committed to that person or that relationship, it's nothing that a person can do.
Oh, I completely agree.
To change that.
I completely agree.
To change that.
Never, a woman or a man should never let someone else's issues become their issues.
Never.
And so with what he shared with you, he felt like it was something that you mm-hmm. wasn't doing. For example, what?
Wasn't stroking his ego. Wasn't very complimentary of him. Just crazy things that I'm like thinking to myself.
Like what?
It goes both ways, though.
So
I wasn't affirming. That I wasn't affirming him.
Sure.
I wasn't affirming him, but that goes both ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you want the affirmation, and I want that as well. Mm-hmm. So it goes both ways. And it was just, it was time. It was time. It was too many red flags there that I have gone on years. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I saw a healthy relationship with my parents. My parents have been married. I'm 47 years old. My parents have been married 46 years.
Wow.
His parents have been married, were married 50 plus years. So we both had the example of marriage and what it takes to sustain a marriage. We both had that in front of us. But you have to have both parties that are willing to work it out, work the kinks out. And he just got up one morning and said, I don't want to be married anymore.
Well, to his credit, a lot of men wouldn't share that. They go and continue on with status quo and have a completely different life outside of the married life.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't know him, but I think there's some value in him at least communicating, sharing that.
Absolutely.
And being honest about it.
Absolutely.
But how do you process that? Because I'm imagining that you felt like everything was not perfect, but fine enough to kind of move on, take care of your son,
right,
continue to grow in the marriage. So it wasn't something that you anticipated that day or any day,
right,
and working up saying, hey, I don't want to be married anymore.
Right.
So how did you like manage that message in your mind and in your heart to know that it's, hey, this is not my fault, this is his issue?
Right.
Did it take you a while to get there?
It did. It took me a while to get there. I did not get there right away, I have to be honest. It took me a while to get there because I was trying to process everything and trying to figure out what happened. What could I have done? What could I have said to make this not be what it is? So it took me a very, very long time to get through that process. But once I really got through the process and really owned up to the part, my part.
And what was your part? Because I want to know, how did you get through the process?
My part was, it takes two. It takes two to make a relationship. Mm-hmm. You can't have one person that's halfway in and another person that's all the way in. It would never work.
So did you feel you were all the way in?
I felt that I was all the way in.
And how did you feel he was?
I felt like he wasn't. Because there is no way that you can be all the way in when you have other distractions that's distracting you.
So
from
what was his other distractions?
Other distractions were women.
Mm-hmm. Were these women in the church? Or
no, these were women on your job. You have lost a couple jobs because of relationships that you've had at work. Inappropriate relationships.
With the women that he was working with. Okay. But how did you get to the other side? I think a lot of listeners want to know, like, I know it's been over a decade, 14, 15 years now, and you seem to be thriving, dating, but how did you get to that place? Obviously, it wasn't easy. It was somewhat of a journey.
Yeah, it was. I can say my faith in God is what got me through it, because I knew if nothing else, God was going to mend my broken heart, and that it was not going to always be like this always. And so I totally leaned and depend on that. And it was that. And with the prayers and support of my family, my close friends, that's what got me through it.
But how did you juggle it, like, from a practical standpoint? Like, I know faith is important. I know having family and friends are important. But here you are, a single mom with your son, a demanding career. You know, he's in school. You're paying for school and trying to manage his activities, extracurricular activities. He's a very cerebral young man and involved in quite a bit of stuff. So, like, from a practical standpoint, like, someone's listening, like, how did you physically, like, we know mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and that's all important, but like, did you have someone helping you? Did you have a schedule? Did you do a calendar? How did you manage to get him from school to the extracurricular activities to the in-school activities to the parent-teacher conferences, like, logistically, because it's just you.
Right.
So although his father is involved on the periphery, but you are there for the day-to-day management.
Right.
How can listeners know, what can they do if they're a single parent and they're trying to manage the schedule and lifestyle of their child plus their lifestyle? How did you do it?
Well, I can honestly say it was not easy. It was very difficult at first. It was very difficult. But what I learned during that process is that I had to sit down and just really tell myself, Nicole, you got to do this. And mind you, I had no family here.
Is that where you're originally from?
I'm originally from Arkansas, so I had no family here.
So most of your family is there?
Yeah, most of my family is there. So it was really just my son and I here alone. But, you know, you sit and you think, and I know that my son had friends at school. And you have people, you know, he was telling me about a friend that he was really, really close to, which is Pablo, which is Chifali's son. And so I can honestly say, with the help of people like a Chifali, they kind of helped me. When I couldn't get off work to get my son, she would go get my son, make sure his homework is done, make sure he's fed. So it's people like that that I had to integrate into my life to make this all work.
So having an external support system, because it still takes a village.
It still takes a village, and it does take a village, and I had my village that I knew if I couldn't count on anyone else. Just an example of if I had something happened to my mother 1 year and I had to fly out of town unexpectedly. His dad was nowhere around, but I had my friend, Chifali. I could call and say, hey, I have to go out of town for about 3 or 4 days. Is there any way you can take care of my son for me? With no question, with no regret. She was like, absolutely. So that's where the bond came with she and I, because she was like that external support that I needed and that I valued, and I still value it to this day.
But I think you bring up a really important point, and that is a lot of times as women, we feel like we have to do it all.
Right.
And we want to, and I'm sure Shafali, you'll attest to this, we feel like we have to be all things to all people at all times, and we don't utilize our extenders. We don't utilize people in our circle. I have this joke that I often share with my patients. I always say, if Jesus were a woman, there would never have been 12 disciples. You know, if he were a woman, never been 12 disciples, because it's when we try to do it all.
Yeah.
And some of our best leaders, whether it's religious or spiritual or political, have always had people that have helped them be the best version of themselves. But as women, oftentimes we just feel guilty when we delegate. We feel guilty when we ask people to help. And we have to be very clear to people that are listening, this is not a sign of weakness when you ask for extenders. Like, you know, everyone needs a Chifali in their life. When we ask for extenders to help us be the best version of ourselves, if we have to go out of town, if we have a meeting, if we have things that need to be done that we have people that we depend on, it's definitely not a sign of weakness. It's more a sign of wisdom than anything. And so I have a question for Chifali. I know she's married, she's a super, super busy, high-level bank executive with 3 children. That are all varying in age, super busy in terms of their academic and social needs, but just the balance. I think Chifali mentioned something I hadn't really thought of this concept, but I think it makes sense. Chifali, you were sharing with me kind of off record that you had a review last week, and your reviewer was talking about work-life balance, and I love the fact you say there's no balance, it's just work-life integration.
That's right. Integration is the only way to go, because there is no balance, I think, for us as women. And I'll admit, I'm a self-admitted control freak. I like to control everything. I like to control everything about my husband, about my kids, about my friends, about myself. I want to be in charge of everything.
But I think that's a big part of why you've been so successful. But yeah, it can be a big part of what can be problematic.
Right. But so realistically, you can't be in control of everything. Mm-hmm. And candidly, as you get a little bit older, you do slow down a little bit, right? I mean, you know, pushing on 50 here, you know, I mean, that's realistic, right? I mean, you just can't do as much. Mm-hmm. Not by any means. I've got plenty of years left, don't worry.
Right.
However, y'all are stuck with me for a while.
We stuck love with each that. Other.
But I think it's okay to accept that you're not great at everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the integration process, right? It's part of understanding that some weeks you're going to have to do more at work because there's more going on, and that's okay. And I think it's okay. You have to explain it to your family and those that are important to you that, hey, listen, I need to be gone a little bit more these couple weeks because this is what's going on. Make them part of it. And then when you have several things going on for your kids, make your work or your team or whoever part of the fact that, hey, listen, I've got these things going on at work, at home, because so, you know, Pablo has this going on, and, you know, so-and-so has this going on, and so, so I have to do this. And I think that you have to try to weave and integrate between the two so that they understand. And candidly, I think you become a better person to be around if you're personally relatable. And you, well, leading a big team, I have a team of almost 500 people. And that's so, you know, so when you think about, you have to be somewhat personable to that team. You have to be relatable because not, I mean, yeah, my leadership team, they do well, right? But you go down, not in any disrespectful manner, but you go down, you have to be able to touch something that makes sense to everybody. And I think that those are the things that make it better. Those are the things that make you more relatable. Those are the things that make it that they want to see you. Like, it's really, really fun to me when I go. Unfortunately, I have a very, very good memory. So when I go to, like, Orlando and I see somebody that talked about, you know, gender, that's their daughter that did so and so, I can remember things like that. Like, I can't remember things I need to remember. I can't remember why I went into the kitchen 2 minutes ago to get something, but I can remember about Holly's,
join the band.
I can remember about Holly's daughter Ginger and the fact that she was trying out for something. And but I think those are the things that are seriously very, very important. And I think that's what makes you that's what makes you very relatable and makes you somebody that can build a followership and set an example for the way a real person can actually, because there's nothing extraordinary about me, nothing.
I would disagree, but
I'm normal, right? I mean, this is, I have worked hard. I think it's attainable. What I've attained is attainable. I've work hard in a relationship with my husband. I work hard in a relationship with my kids. I work hard at my job at work. And I think those are things that a lot of people can do, but I don't think everybody has, what's the right word for it? I think that I have been fortunate. The doors have been opened for me, and maybe it's just my charismatic personality. But
you know what, Shafali? I'm going to stop you right there. I think a lot of times we don't give ourselves enough credit. Sure, there were doors that were open, but I think beyond luck is where opportunity meets preparation. And you were always overly prepared as a woman. That it's a lot, not a lot of people in your industry that look like you, high level banking.
Sure.
You know, as an Indian American, because you know, of course, was raised here and had a wonderful, you know, academic pedigree, you know, with your parents supporting you along the way, but you put in the work, Shafali.
I mean, you
were very hardworking.
But I don't think that I'm more special than anybody else.
I think
that luck has played a little bit of a part into it.
But luck is where opportunity meets preparation.
I agree.
You were prepared.
So
you didn't just show
fair.
Up and say, hey,
that's
give
fair.
Me a chance, but you were more prepared than anyone in the room. Because you had to be.
That's fair.
Because you had to be.
That's fair.
But I think I love the fact that you mentioned work-life integration and how you were relatable to your team, but also by sharing with your family what was going on with work. And I think I probably need to do that more often because I hadn't done that. I just kind of bury my head in the sand and do what needs to be done. And when I come up for air, we hang out and I try to make good on the time that I missed out when I was having that moment where I had to kind of bury my head. But would you allow your family to know that they matter because you integrate them and they feel validated because you're saying, hey, I got this going on at work. I need full buy-in, full participation. Once I come up for air, I'm going to be all in with us. But right now, I really have this working.
And they're going to be interested, right? Because, I mean, there's something magical about storytelling, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right? So storytelling is amazing regardless of who you are. You know, any little kids love stories. We love stories. Elderlies like stories. But make it a story and say, hey, listen, this is why I'm going to be gone a little bit more this week. This is what I have going on, and I promise you, your family will come back to you a week later and say, hey, how'd that go? Mm-hmm. You know what happened? It might not be immediately, mm-hmm. but it'll be something that they remember.
Now, how old are your children, Shafari?
I have an 18, a 16, and a 9-year-old.
18, 16, 9-year-old. So mm-hmm. a varying range, especially mm-hmm. the 9-year-old, because mm-hmm. you have teenagers. Yeah. And then you have the 9-year-old.
One is evolved out of teenagers, the other one is so borderline.
But I think the fact that you at least involve them in the conversation, so mm-hmm. I think a lot of listeners will benefit from being reminded that it's important that you have conversations with the people that you live with to make sure that you're communicating with them what your responsibilities are, so that way everyone kind of has an understanding of what the level of commitment is, and so they'll know very shortly that once you deliver on that promise, you'll be able to be there like 110% with your family. So it sounds like communication is really important to making sure there's that work life integration for sure. Now, have you, Nicole, found any techniques helpful in terms of, like, when you're super busy at work as a single mom? Because I know Shafali's married, she has a wonderful husband, and in the medical field, so he's just as busy as she is. But from a single one where it's just you and you're kind of having to weigh in on your household, how are you integrating that work-life integration, as you probably call it?
It's the same thing. It's interesting. My son and I, we have a very open relationship, and he's very involved in details and things that I have going on with work. I'm always including him and letting him know everything that's going on with me, and vice versa. So it's basically always just keeping him on top of things and letting him know what I have going on. If I'm having to go out of town, if I'm having to work late, he knows that. And which, you know, we just work the kinks out. We just work it out. Mm-hmm. You know, our communication is very open. He knows that he can come to me and talk to me about anything regarding, you know, how he feels about, you know, mom, you're working too much, or, you know, mom, we're not spending enough time with each other. I mean, he's at the age where he's very vocal about that.
Sure.
And so
I think it's great that he is like a teenager. This is his senior year of mm-hmm. high school. And I think you bring up a good point, because I have smaller, younger children. They're 7 and 9. Mm-hmm. And I'm just getting to the point where the children have been sharing with me. Mm-hmm. Like when I go out for a meeting, they're like, well, how long are you going to be gone? Mm-hmm. And what is this meeting about? And will you be back for this particular event? So it's a lot, my absence is a lot more palpable. Whereas mm-hmm. when they were younger, it wasn't as big of a deal with right. my being outside the mm-hmm. home. So I had to make a conscious effort, like, okay, now that I'm aware that the children are more mindful of my absence, how am I going to act? Because mm-hmm. there's one thing to be aware, but it's a whole nother level in terms of how are you going to act upon that awareness. Right. So I decided to roll back mm-hmm. on some boards that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And so this year I'm going to be on 2 less boards. I have to make a decision about, okay, like Shafali mentioned, like I can be 110% at work and in the community, which means I'm not like doing my best
really
at home.
Really effective at home.
Or when
absolutely.
I'm being like amazing at home and things are suffering, or shall I say, I'm not giving my 110% mm-hmm. effort at work and in the community, but also to know that that's okay, because you don't necessarily have to be, like all in at all times, or be in all in for all people at all times, but absolutely. Just know that at some point in your career, in your work-life integration, that you may be 110% in one arena, but just know that you may be 50 or 40% in the other arena, and that's okay.
Exactly.
So we have to give ourselves permission to know that we're still amazing, we're still awesome, without having to be 110% at everything we do at all times, right, for all people.
Exactly.
You know, put your own mask on first.
Exactly. And that open communication with your children is vitally important. I mean, the more open you are with them, the more open they are with you.
Yeah, I like
that. And I've
that.
Learned that at a very, very young age. To just let them know, you know, what's going on with me, what I'm feeling, and vice versa. And he knows that he is welcome and at any time can explain to me or, you know, disclose to me what he's feeling as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Nicole, just like in closing, like what can you give our listeners to the podcast from like a single woman's perspective? And I have to say that because Shefali is married, but I like to give it from both perspectives. Single parent perspective on how women can get back in the driver's seat and know that you can raise happy, healthy, functional young adults and still work and be all in. Like, what would you say has been the most valuable advice that you've given yourself that you want to share with the listeners?
That it's okay being single and to know that your singleness doesn't define who you really are. It doesn't define who you really are. You be the best single mom you know how to be and be all things to your children. And then once they are gone and away, then is your time to jump in the driver's seat. And I'm excited about this new chapter of my life. My son is, as I said previously, he's on his way to Harvard. So I'm just excited. I've done a job.
I'm excited for you.
I've done a very, very, very good job being a single parent. And I have to pat myself on the back for that. Because with the help of the Lord and my son and I just having that relationship with each other, I think all of this is just manifesting itself.
And Nicole, you know, I submit to you, I don't even feel like a lot of women need to call themselves a single parent because you're not doing it alone as
right.
one individual.
Absolutely.
You have a tribe, you have a group of
I have a village.
People around you. You need to reach out to those, delegate.
Absolutely.
And know that that's not a sign of weakness, but a sign of wisdom. And Shefali,
absolutely.
Any last words to our listeners? I know you're married, super supportive husband, fantastic children, but I know it's not perfect. But for even those women that are married and they have a supportive spouse, but still you're working outside the home, how are you making sense of it? What would you recommend to women that are climbing that corporate ladder and trying to make sense of it all and be the best version of themselves and still at work and at home?
So I would just say don't beat yourself up. Just enjoy every minute of every day, and you're going to fail some days, and that's okay, and that makes you more relatable, because everybody fails. Nothing's perfect. You know, we live in this world of social media and pictures, and when you look at other people's things, everything looks absolutely perfect.
Oh, and people are saying they're seeing like chapter 45.
Right. And, they're seeing 1 minute of chapter
right.
45.
Right.
And
sure.
So we're just going to, just embrace every minute, celebrate every minute, and it's okay if you fail.
And to give ourselves permission.
And to pick yourself up.
Yeah, to
pick yourself up and to
to know that you may be 110% at work, which means you're going to be 50% at home, or you may be 110% at home and 50% at work, and that's okay.
Yep, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And just accept yourself with even little faults are okay.
Even with your flaws.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
I love it.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, you've been listening to Soul Surgeons with Dr. Spencer, and we're going to have a follow-up episode with the children of working moms to get the children to weigh in, to get their perspective. I think it's super important. So again, thank you for listening. I hope that this was a helpful episode for you all. Again, this is Dr. Spencer. You've been listening to Soul Surgeons, and we'll check you out in the next episode.
All right, girl, get your kids to bed. Hey, we'll go to bed.